Welcome, Matt Howie.
Welcome,
Jessamine.
Welcome to the Metafilter Podcast.
Welcome to episode 21 of the Metafilter Podcast. Today we have an interview with Jesse Thorne from The Sound of Young America and recaps from Metafilter, Ask Metafilter, in the last month since it's our last podcast with Jessamine and me. Like to welcome Jesse Thorne to the Metafilter Podcast today. Jesse, thanks for
joining. Yes.
I'm almost getting radio-like there.
We're on our way.
So I guess I've been a long fan of your show for about a year or so. Back when Merlin showed me you had Jonathan Colton on a long time ago. You know, it was like a year and a half old show or something. I've sort of been a fan ever since, and I've been thinking of interviewing you, and then there was finally a post about Sound of Young America on Metafilter.
Yeah, so if I can finally legitimately be summarized.
Yeah. So people asked me, hey, you should interview him, and I just went, oh, right, sure. So here we are.
That was my position exactly.
I guess I should mention up front a slight disclaimer that I guess I'm underwriting your show now, and this isn't meant to be like a Flintstones meet the Jetsons or anything, but
it's more of a Scooby-Doo meets the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, it makes a little more sense, but not too much.
I'm the metal Lark Lemon of public radio.
Well, I figured I could throw, you know, $100 into the OPB well, or I could actually directly support, you know, someone who produces a program I like. It just seems a lot more, you know, direct.
Well, God bless OPB, especially if they ever pick up The Sound of Young America. But God bless you first and foremost for paying my rent.
You have to be so diplomatic about that stuff. So I guess I have to ask you to describe what's The Sound of Young America, how long it's been around.
Well, it has existed in some form or other for coming up on 7 years, something like that. It started out as my college radio show. I started when I was a sophomore at UC Santa Cruz here in California. And there's a pretty significant college station there. Like this, it's a station with a real transmitter and a real audience. And me and a couple of my buddies, Gene O'Neill and Jordan Morris, started this talk show. And we didn't really know how hard it was to do a talk show when we started it. It turns out it's just spectacularly hard.
Was it daily or weekly?
It was weekly. It was an hour a week, and that was the smallest time slot we could get. it's just, I have so much, like, for somebody like, say, a Howard Stern or something, who talks for 5 hours every day, I can't imagine how they possibly do it. It boggles my mind, but that's beside the point. The point is, so I did it with Jordan and Gene for until they graduated from college, and then once they graduated from college, I continued to do it sort of first with co-hosts and then by myself. And I was living in San Francisco, long graduated from college, borrowing my mom's car to drive to Santa Cruz once a week to do the show on my college radio station. It was getting really sad. And then about a year and a half ago, maybe, I moved from my college radio station to the large public radio station in Santa Cruz, KUSP. Apparently somebody on the board of KUSP listened to college radio a lot and liked my show. And maybe 3 months ago, four months ago, July, I started being distributed nationally by Public Radio International. So that's sort of the history of the show. What the show is it's basically an arts and entertainment interview show, like a Fresh Air Weekend or something like that, but with sort of a different cultural perspective. It's basically the sole criterion for getting on The Sound of Young America is whether I think it is awesome, whatever it is. So. A lot of comedy and just a lot of things that are fun and cool. Indie rock and hip hop also well represented in the guests, which of course is kind of unusual for the world of public radio.
Didn't you move to L.A. in the last year or so?
Yeah, about a year ago, I moved from San Francisco to L.A. My fiance's in law school down here at Loyola, and you know, it's Los Angeles. I don't want to offend the people who posted that article on Metafilter about how amazing Los Angeles is, because you don't ever have any, no one ever has any expectations of you because nobody cares about anyone else. But Los Angeles has been a big cultural adjustment for me from San Francisco. But the big advantage is that, unlike San Francisco, lots and lots of people are here regularly. That I would want to have on my show. I mean, whether or not they live here, they're at least going to come through. And being nationally syndicated, one of the big differences is that public radio stations won't stand for phone interviews, which is what I did almost exclusively when I was in Santa Cruz, because no one was ever in person in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Except for Bob Edwards once. So, you know, one of the big changes has been having to get people actually in person, because I don't have a budget to rent studios like other real radio shows do. So they have to get them in here into my apartment. So being in Los Angeles makes that a lot easier.
I do have to confess that, like, as I'm going through your archives, you know, you must have, what, like 2-3 years of archives of shows on the website, MaximumFun.org, for anyone listening. You know, half of the old ones are like phone-ins, and I'll like have it on my iPod ready to go as a, you know, a podcast on the road, and I'll go, oh man, this is a phone one, because the sound quality's not as good.
Yeah, well, I mean,
but now they're all great.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it's sacrifices and whatever. I mean,
yeah,
a lot of public radio people are always asking me, how did you get such great guests when you were on college radio? And besides sort of moderate level of kind of deception, obfuscation, and sophistry about what my show actually was. The other thing that I was able to do was just get people on the phone. I mean, you know, I had Chuck D on the show. He was driving from like Atlanta to, you know, Tallahassee or something that when I interviewed him.
Oh, man. How long has Jordan Jesse Go been around? That's sort of you and Jordan from the original show, shooting the shit for an hour or two each week, right?
Yeah, that we just celebrated our first anniversary. I actually didn't even notice, except a couple listeners emailed me to congratulate me. I had no idea. But yeah, the other big advantage of living in Los Angeles is, you know, Jordan is not only my former co-host on The Sound of Young America, but he's also pretty much my best pal, and he's also the funniest person I've ever known in real life. So I get to hang out with him on the radio for an hour, on the fake radio, the internet radio, for an hour or so. And yeah, I mean, like, that was something that we started because I just wanted to do it, because he's my friend and I just love doing it. And it still feels that way. Absolutely. Like, sometimes The Sound of Young America is work because I have all these weird requirements I have to do. But, on Jordan Jesse Go, I can really do whatever the fuck I want. And it's really great. Like saying fuck, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I had Ira Glass on The Sound of Young America recently, and he was telling me about how he listens to Jordan Jesse Go, which
blew my
mind. Could not even imagine that actually happening in real life. But he like cited specific things about Jordan Jesse Go and demonstrated it to me. It freaked me out, to be honest. Okay, so that's number one. But number two is, he was saying, oh gosh, I wish I could do something like Jordan Jesse Go, where there's no requirements, you can just play.
Yeah.
I was like, and I just told him, you know, hey Ira, if you want to, I'll host it. So like, I got web space for that kind of thing, Ira.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. I couldn't believe it either, because like, I have been going through the back catalog of Sound of Young America, and Jordan Jesse Go, man, you have to be a kind of a super fan at that point to, you know, it's just so much time, and there's so many of those shows too, and I was astounded when I heard him say he listened to it. Like, does he have any time for, I mean,
I don't know how he could ever have time for anything. I mean,
yeah.
that poor guy is making a radio show and a TV show at the same time, and I, you know, one of the reasons that I have moved towards the kind of show that I do now on The Sound of Young America, which is sort of long form interviews that aren't super heavily edited, is just a time issue. Like, that's what I can manage. You know, like, I could create, if I was producing This American Lifestyle pieces, you know, you can maybe produce one of those, if one person can produce one of those in maybe a month.
Yeah.
And that's if you're really good at it, which of course I'm not. So, I mean, the the involvement of the production of that show is like off the charts.
Well, one thing I like about your show is the interviews. I think you're somewhere in the middle of Charlie Rose, I think of as like kid gloves, softballs, nothing but softballs. And Terry Gross rarely challenges her interviewees. But I thought the Ira Glass one was pretty good because the middle got a little slightly heated. I think he diffused it pretty quick. But I don't know. I just liked that was a bit honest. And I mean, you weren't mocking him or calling him on stuff, but it was, I've seen you do this with a lot of interviewees. Basically, you know, ask them honestly about, you know, maybe weaknesses in their approach or their shows or what they do. You asked them, like, are you always looking for drama and everything? Like, aren't you overdoing it a bit? Like, does everything have to be a story?
I mean, I just feel like it would be really easy for me interviewing Ira Glass, who, you know, I mean, I wouldn't work in public radio if it weren't for Ira Glass being in the world. I mean, I've never aspired to make anything that was like This American Life, but it has been the most inspirational thing to me in terms of just the idea that somebody could have a great idea that was not like the other things on public radio and then put it on public radio and be successful. Like, that is exceptionally inspirational to me. And so Ira Glass is sort of, I mean, you know, like, he's definitely top 10 heroes of Jesse. Mm-hmm. So I thought it would be really easy for the interview to slip into, you know, Chris Farley show from Saturday Night Live. So, and I mean, with everybody, it's like, I wouldn't ask, you know, I'm not trying to get Ira. I'm not trying to stick it to him. I'm not Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes. But like, I think Ira has thought more than anyone else about what the format of his show is. And it's very tightly formatted and it's a very specific thing. And, you know, he's thought about what the positive and negative aspects of that are. And, you know, you don't really hear a lot of that. I mean, you hear these kind of criticisms of This American Life from time to time, like this recent article that was in The Atlantic or Harper's or something like that, that was about the ascent of the quirky and twee in popular culture, that was totally ridiculous, just totally inane. And that's usually the level of criticism that This American Life gets. But I don't think it's above criticism, you know, like, I think there's problems. But I knew that Ira would have answers to my questions, you know, and they would be interesting answers. And it was true. I mean, he's a brilliant guy and he does what he does advisedly. So, and he gave really sincere, careful answers to my questions, you know? Yeah. Plus I had a friend who had his story sort of chronicled on This American Life. And I personally felt like it got a bit warped in that process. And so given that fact, I sort of had the opportunity to use that as a wedge to get into what Ira's ideas are about what nonfiction should be, which is, you know, he was on the show to talk about his book, which was this really wonderful compilation of nonfiction pieces. And they're all sort of tied together with this manifesto that Ira wrote. That's the introduction of the thing. That's very specific ideas about what nonfiction and reporting specifically can be. And I thought, well, my buddy's experience, is my buddy's Charlie Todd, who's the boss of this comedy group called Improv Everywhere.
Yeah.
My buddy's experience could be an interesting way to get into that. So, which I thought it was, you know, I mean, we moved on from that relatively quickly, but it's, you know, you're always looking for a way to get into the important stuff.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard anyone, you know, question Ira's, you know, sometimes the show's a little formulaic, you know, maybe too much. And
I think always the show is very formulaic. I think it's just,
I was trying to be nice there, but yeah, I thought you
whether it's for good or ill, you know.
Yeah, you're the first person I'd ever heard not just purely fawn over him and but actually challenge him a little bit.
Well, I've got an autographed poster of him on my wall that I can look at and see right now, so I have no need to worry about whether I hold him in high regard.
How do you get the guests you get? I mean, it seems like a lot of them are kind of LA alt comedy people in the sort of 6 degrees of separation from there. How do you convince people to come over to your apartment now and record a show?
It's weird. I just interviewed two of the guys from the band Les Savifaves on Saturday night for a show that's going to air sometime in January. And I went to pick them up at the El Rey Theater here in L.A. where they just finished their sound check. And I talked to Tim, the lead singer of the band. And I was like, hey, I'm Jesse, you know, whatever. I'm here to pick you up to go do a radio interview. And he says, oh, are we going to go over to your apartment or whatever? And I'm like, yes, but why do you know that? And he's like, oh, I've heard the show. I listen to the show all the time on WNYC and stuff.
Oh, cool.
So like being on real radio stations is kind of amazing. Like the fact that, you know, people who live in New York have often heard my show and they know what it is, like they're familiar with it. That's completely new to me after 7 years. But before, I think you're right. Like, comedians are a group that are relatively easy to book because they, you know, unlike actors who have to be on the set for like 14-hour shifts, comedians, when they perform, you know, they're performing and that's like 3 hours of their day. But then the rest of the time they're, you know, doing whatever they're doing, you know, writing or messing around or going on an audition or something. And so they're relatively easy to book because, you know, they have a lot of self-interest in promoting themselves and some free time. And I think also, you know, once I'd done a couple interviews with really credible people, you know, if you go to Dimitri Martin and say, oh, you know, I've interviewed Patton Oswalt and Louis C.K., like, you know, Dimitri Martin's like, oh, this is a guy who chose funny comedians to have on his show instead of, you know, Mike and the Lobster Man, who, you know, play the Austin Powers sound effects on the morning show, you know. So that's one thing. And then, you know, I don't know, here's the thing, like I'm kind of a lazy guy and I'm just hate making phone calls. It makes me really uncomfortable and I'm just not tenacious. And I also don't get a rush of adrenaline from closing a deal. So those are all qualities that make me the worst radio producer ever, because those are basically the things that radio producers do. So my system usually involves just asking. Anytime I think of somebody I'd like to have on the show, I kind of figure out how I could ask them to come on the show. And then I ask, and if they don't get back to me, I usually just forget that I ever asked them and then ask them again like 2 years later when I think of it again. And if they get back to me, then I try and schedule something. So I just try and make sure. It's sort of like what you would do, like if you wanted to get more mail at your house, you know, like you to get mail, if you want to get packages in the mail, you have to like send people letters. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just try and send out a lot of letters and hope that some people write back.
Are you tracking down people's, what, agent phone numbers or something?
I've never dealt with agents. It's weird. Like, there's all these different kinds of publicists. I mean,
like, I wouldn't know how to get to Dimitri Martin right now. I could probably think of a friend I could ask in New York that kind of knows him, but...
Yeah, I mean, once in a while, you know, some folks have helped me in the... hey, I've got a friend who would be perfect for your show area. You know, for example, you mentioned Jonathan Colton earlier. You know, Jonathan Colton came to me through John Hodgman, who came on my show shortly after his first book came out, before he was on The Daily Show and stuff like that, and just had a really good time and is now kind of like my buddy.
Yeah.
So like Hodgman has helped me, you know, he knows people and he'll suggest someone who a publicist wouldn't necessarily book. Like, say I had Alison Silverman, who's the head writer of the Colbert Report, on my show. And if I called Comedy Central and said, I want to have the head writer on, they would think I was crazy. They would just ignore me. I know, because I've tried that kind of thing before. Whereas, you know, if I just email her and say, hey, Alison, John Hodgman gave me your email address or whatever, then she might say yes. but like, generally, it's just, you know, when people are in town to do something, they do a lot of publicity. Or like when people have a book out, they do a lot of publicity and they tend to go on publicity tours. And, you know, like you just kind of figure out how you can get to people. And, you know, I don't really give a hoot about timeliness or like, if I think you're awesome, I think you're just as awesome like before or 6 months after your book came out as you are like in the initial media frenzy. So I think that also helps from time to time, you know.
Yeah.
Plus, I also book the occasional, like, you know, like maybe Henry Rollins, who's one of the coolest people I've ever had on my show and was one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. You know, like he was on like a stand-up tour or something. And, you know, I don't know, you know, Henry Rollins is an amazing guy. I'm not as nuts about his stand-up, but you know, like it's you know, you just get them where you can get them, you know.
Yeah. I guess what's the ultimate goal? Are you gunning for Terry Gross's job? I always think of you as sort of the David Letterman to her Carson.
Yeah,
just a bit more mainstream, you know, not as funny.
that would be amazing. I would, you know, I have a really great time doing The Sound of Young America. Like I just really like doing it, you know? I mean, I didn't grow up, you know, I'm sure Letterman grew up imagining himself being Carson every day, you know? And yeah. I didn't grow up imagining myself being Terry Gross, but I mean, that would be even weirder than I was. But it's what a great thing to do. I mean, I just love doing it. And you know, I'm almost to the point where I consistently make a lower middle class living. So, you know, like my goals, I just have been taking it one step at a time. I had this conversation the other day with Nick Hornby when he was on my show. And he was talking about how he only really became a successful writer in his mid-30s. And he didn't really expect it. And he said people always said he was so brave for sticking with writing, but actually he kind of thought of himself as being kind of a coward, because he never like tried anything new or like did anything different or anything. Not because he was convinced that he was eventually going to become a success if he worked hard enough, but just because that was the only thing he had figured out.
Uh-huh.
And he just thought he should stick to this thing that he kind of had figured out, whether or not it was successful. And I totally empathize with that. Like, I'm still doing my college radio show, basically.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like all my goals are short-term goals. Like my goals are like, get the program director of KQED in San Francisco to actually listen to The Sound of Young America and consider it for a time slot. Like make friends with people like KCRW here in LA, so maybe they'll carry the show. Convince somebody at the public radio station in Philo, California, that my show isn't too like big city for them. Like stuff like that. Like that's, you know, that's sort of the kind of objectives I have. Like the only sort of big picture objectives I have are maybe like, it would be really cool if I sometime had Randy Newman on my show. Like that's pretty much it. Like it's pretty much just, I'd like to have Randy Newman on my show. That's like my only long-term goal.
Not a bad goal.
At some point I would like to have Randy Newman on my show, cause I think Randy Newman's really cool and funny and a really cool guy.
I guess I'm doing the same thing. Metafilter is like the first web app I ever wrote. So,
yeah, I mean, do you think that you are still doing Metafilter because you always had this amazing grand vision for what Metafilter would be, or because you made this thing that you thought was kind of cool and then you kind of stuck with it and it's kind of working out and you're like, hey, that's cool. It's working out.
Yeah, it's just sticking with it, especially on the web. You know, it's been 8 years. Anything on the web for 8 years is like a dinosaur. So.
Yeah, I mean, you do that, you put up, you're like, hey, what if we had a thing where people could like ask a question to the other people and then
yeah.
people would answer it? And then all of a sudden that's the most popular part of the website, you know,
yeah.
like you just, that's how I feel, you know, like I'm just one step at a time and just begging for money twice a year on my podcast so I can eat. And then I kind of get along. Okay. I got a dog recently. That's working out well, you know.
When you
I'm
get
engaged, little things.
When you get picked up by a show, does that mean they have to pay you?
Yeah, well, what happens is they pay Public Radio International, and then I get a percentage of that money that they pay Public Radio International. So it's sort of it's like public television in the sense that every public radio station makes all their own programming decisions. So there's no, like, I imagined a world where if I got picked up by one of the national distributors like NPR or PRI or American Public Media, that I would then automatically be making a living. But it turns out that's not how it works. You have to like get a lot of stations to pick up your show before you even get enough money from stations for it to make be the living of one person.
But aren't they supposed to represent you like an agent and like sell you to hundreds of?
Yeah, they kind of do. I mean, I have nothing bad to say about them because they've really taken a big risk in picking up my show. You know, like my show's really weird compared to other public. They have no idea whether it's going to be a success.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? And they have no reason to expect that it will be. So you know, like whatever effort they put in, I feel like is kind of gravy. You know, like I'm just happy to have their imprimatur on it so that I can, if I call a station, it's not just like, hey, I'm this weird guy who still does his college radio station in Santa Cruz. I'm also on in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Would you consider carrying the show? Which is about where I was at when I moved to KUSP and I had my first trial run on WNYC in New York.
Wow. I guess just to wrap up, do you have any favorite moments or threads from Metafilter you can think of, or experiences with Metafilter?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, there's this, something that is fresh at the top of my mind is this encyclopedic Pee-wee post that is,
as we
record this, up on Metafilter right now, that includes the entire Pee-wee's Playhouse Christmas special, which is just one of my favorite things ever. I mean, talk about top 10 heroes. Way above Ira Glass is Paul Rubens as Pee-wee Herman. There's a huge poster of him on my wall directly to my left. And the Christmas special where he is, number one, he has almost naked men with construction belts building an addition to his house out of fruitcake. Number two, he has this amazing scene where him and Magic Screen go ice skating with Magic Johnson. He talks on the picture phone to Whoopi Goldberg, but easily the best part is Charo tries to teach him. Charo comes on, sings Feliz Navidad, and then Pee-wee goes like, "What does Feliz Navidad mean, Charo?" And then Charo goes like, "Well, Pee-wee, Feliz Navidad means Merry Christmas in Spanish. Why don't you try it? Feliz Navidad, Pee-wee." And then Pee-wee goes, "Feliz Navidad, Charo." Oh, man. I'm going to wait a few more days closer to Christmas, and then I'm going to post that on my blog, because Pee-wee's, man, what a great, great, great thing that is. Yeah, but, you know, I just mentioned I got engaged, and when I was thinking about getting engaged, I posted on Ask Metafilter about where I should buy an estate, where was a good place to buy estate jewelry in Los Angeles. I got some recommendations for a place where I ended up buying my fiance's engagement ring. So it's from old favorites to new movers and shakers. Metafilter is vitally important in the life of every public radio personality. That didn't really make sense, but I figured if I kept the tone consistent until the end, maybe people would let it slide.
That sounds like a perfect ad. Who does the voiceover for the Metafilter plug anyway?
The Metafilter plug that you'd compared to some sort of system noise in Apple OS X, as I recall, is my intern, Emma McDermott. She's from Northern Ireland. She lives in Donegal. Or maybe she lives in Belfast now. But anyway, she's from Northern Ireland. And I thought, well, if every other public radio station in the country can have someone from Great Britain doing all of their voiceovers, then I can too.
Awesome.
Actually, you know what it really was? I didn't want to do it myself because I thought it would be, you know, more distinct if it came from a different voice than mine, since mine's the only one on the show.
Yeah, it'd be and, a confusing break.
It was so it was either Emma the intern or my fiance or my dog. And I went with Emma because she's got some radio experience.
Well, thanks for joining us today, and that's about it.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, Matt. And thank you so much for having me. And I just love the Metafilter to death.
All right, thanks.
Another 7:37 rumbles overhead, and they're always close enough to shake the walls. And I already know you haven't heard a word I've said over the din of breaking picture frames and china down the hall. And even though it's been like this for years.
Let me see. All right, this is episode, I don't know. let me wait. Ah! It's been a long time. It's been like a month.
It's been way too long, and we're going to get like
over
a more
month.
Normal.
It's been like 6 weeks, which is awesome.
December 3rd. Well, and you know, part of the problem was it was holiday time. You had a vacation. I was away for the holidays. Nobody wants to do anything in the first 2 weeks of January.
Yeah.
So we're going to try and be a little bit more on top of. You talked to the guy from Sounds of Young America.
Yeah,
he's also
yeah.
a me fight.
Yep, and I hope it's not out of date. We recorded that like before Christmas, and I was trying to get it out between the week and week between Christmas and New Year's, but then I had to go family stuff down south, and we never got that off. So yeah,
that's okay.
I don't think there's anything horribly out of date on it, unless he says, "Come to my upcoming gig that happened like on Monday night." What else has happened in the last month? Whole bunch of, I guess.
Well, tons of crazy stuff. I mean, first of all, we were just sort of winding down from the epic meta talk threads talking about sexism and what to do, and then we wound up with the epic sort of GiveWell event, which is the first event that's happened on Metafilter that I've known that spawned this whole Metafilter wiki. Let me tell you what the heck is going on, you know, like crib sheet, which I thought was kind of interesting.
You know, that actually helped, you know, 1,000 comments. Yeah, it's just a nightmare for any normal person to wade through, even for, you know, most Metafilterites. But this happened with the Casey Nicole thing, because everyone would go, read these three threads with 800 to 1,000 comments in it, and you'll get the whole amazing story in the first thing,
and people
like,
were like, "I can has crib notes, please, please."
The first thing like a real reporter told me was like, "Look, I've got all day to spend on this, but a lot of people want to move faster than that. So if you can get someone to make a fact out of it, the whole thing, that would be great. Like a one pager on the entire story with hyperlinks to the sources." And so like some member of Metafilter did it. So if you search for the Casey Nicole fact, you'll still get it to this day, I'm pretty sure. So it's good.
Actually, no, it was on Logboy's site, and it's not there anymore.
No!
So we don't have one on the Metafilter wiki. We're going to have to dig that out the Wayback Machine.
Yeah. He had one detail wrong in the whole thing. I told him really early on to fix it, but otherwise it was like an awesome rundown of basically 2,000 comments. And I thought the GiveWell thing definitely deserved it. Especially because it's nuanced.
Well, and people did a really awesome job at like summing it up and having the wiki be like a little bit more of a dispassionate,
yeah,
you know, explication of what actually happened.
And I like how the wiki put on the same level that like, here's what the Holden guy did on Metafilter. Here's what he did on six other sites. Because the story, the simple version of the story was, guy astroturfs on Metafilter, community revolts and freaks out on him. Now he's fired. Like that was the dumb 10-second version of the story without all the nuance of he was actually slagging other charities, which is totally lame. And then he was
as not himself, totally lame.
And then he was doing it on several sites and impersonating employees' emails.
Well, and sites like Lifehacker and Boing Boing, which are like, you know, other big traffic sites, not just other like teeny tiny sites.
With no sort of what's the word I'm looking for?
Scruples?
No, I would say there's no means to, you know, nobody judges comments there like they do on Metafilter. There's no place to complain about, hey, this is weird, this Lifehacker comment on Lifehacker.
Right, so you send Teresa Hayden an email and hope, basically, on Boing Boing. Yeah.
And you know what, something's weird at the very core of it? I was thinking about this the other day. What was Holden's first response when he first posted in MetaTalk? What he said was, I wasn't completely dishonest. I could have used an IP proxy server. Like, do you remember when he said that? That was the first thing he thought of, was like total anonymity hacking. That was like, wow, where you set the bar in the sand on, you know, ethical, not ethical is really far away from where I think it should be. Like,
That
was his first response. Like, oh, I could have been totally anonymous and like used a friend's PayPal and used a proxy server, like, so I'm being good.
and you read, I mean, it actually, you know, it's the gift that keeps on giving. There was basically a second article in the New York Times about what happened to the other person.
The Ellie guy,
Ellie guy, who actually
what happened to him?
Well, he only got busted for like one self-reported fake comment using his girlfriend's name on another site. But this article in the Times is actually a little bit more clueful than the last one.
Cool.
But, you know, he did also get dinged, and the New York Times did write about it, you know, on its newspaper. So, I mean, that's kind of
interesting. Oh, this is like an actual article. I think the first one was just a blog post like on New York Times.
No, I think the other one was a real article too.
Oh, wow. Still, so the MN speak, that's Astro Zombie, right? Pretty sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Yeah, he told me earlier.
Astro Zombie, who gets like Scooby Dumb credits in the sort of GiveWell threads. Yeah. He's like, it's the mods and Astro Zombie.
From like the day it launched, the day it happened, he went, I moderate you know, this Minneapolis site, and we got this weird comment, and I'm gonna watch it, and I think it might be one of them, but like,
you couldn't trace it.
But
right,
that's interesting.
Well, the whole thing was really interesting, and Cortex and Miko both spent a lot of time like on other sites. I did too, like explaining what was going on. Miko says the Chronicle of Philanthropy is actually gonna do a print article about the whole thing. We had a bunch of new members from other sites, which was sort of good news and bad news. And DW, I don't know how he pronounces his name, who works at nonprofits, also spent a lot of time. Nax. It was interesting. Like a lot of Mephites who don't participate, who participate like a normal amount, really like kind of stepped up and were like, look, I really want to explain to you how nonprofit philanthropy works. And they really, I think, made the community look even awesomer and sort of more well-rounded. It was really cool from my perspective.
Yeah, Miko was awesome just from the very start, even for noticing it, but like just breaking it down. But I think you can get like an awesome article, especially for like a philanthropy centered magazine or journal, but just saying, look, it's, you know, whatever, philanthropy 2.0, it's the web, it's everything's on the internet now, but here's how not to do it. Like, here's how not to fake your way through the internet. Like,
well, and I think part of the whole issue was if they hadn't been totally committed to this radical transparency notion, this wouldn't have bit them on the ass so hard. But they were like totally like, we're an open book. And so now they have these like audio recordings of their board meetings that now everybody's picking over with a fine tooth comb. And it's like, how do you like it? How do you like it? You know, like, it's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas I think for a lot of people who have been living online for longer, that seems less crazy, but we also kind of know how to do it better, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a lot smarter about what I put online because I know it could come back and bite me on the ass in 5 years. Like, I just have that consciousness about it.
It's just also like, I don't know, I think we're from a different time or something, like where we just know, like, you know, I don't know, just be a nice person online like you are in real life, and, you know, not bad things won't really happen. And I just think someone who maybe was 10 years younger than me just grew up, you know, goofing around.
Doesn't have that same faith or doesn't have that same idea.
I didn't have the internet till I was like, you know, whatever, 22 or something. So if I had it when I was 12,
I just barely had it in college. Yeah, we've talked about this.
Yeah, yeah. But if I was like 12 and, you know, all the porn I wanted, all the software I ever wanted to, you know, hack on, and
music is basically free.
Yeah, like I might not have the same sort of ethics and respect for karma and stuff like that.
Right. And I was very excited because it made people look at the wiki a whole bunch more. And we've started, actually, this was the other thing I was going to mention. We've started trying to actually group some things together on the wiki. So all those like best of ask me things that have been started on the wiki, we now have like a category, which I know is kind of like small and ridiculous, but you know, it's kind of neat because it means that somebody who wants to go find best of ask me threads can now find them in one category called Ask Me Collections, which I just wanted to mention because I'm very proud of it, even though it wasn't particularly complicated.
Well, some of that stuff started with the awesome, what was it? Was it the cooking thread or was it the book thread? I think it was the cooking.
Well, there have been a couple.
But
yeah.
Someone did the monster, like every awesome cooking thread ever on Ask Metafilter in one gigantic page. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah. And so now there's like four or five of them, and they can be reached all together through this one category in addition to each individual page standing on its own, which is
male fiction help in the books. That's awesome. Wow. This is a lot of work.
It warms my librarian heart.
This is something that just would it's so much work and never end, but it's so helpful to everybody to have these shortcuts for like.
Well, and the easier it is to find on the general internet, the easier it is. I mean, it's hard, right? Because it's a wiki. You don't want to attract like total spam bots, but you really want people to add and organize and do.
Maybe
that
we can do this at the top level categories or something like.
That would be nice when we redesign the header. Yeah.
Or like this cooking, like the Eat Me list. Maybe that should go if you're like in the cooking category or something. People aren't on the category pages very often, but
I think we need to, think a little bit about sort of sidebar.
How to bring it back.
You know, tweaking.
In my mind, sometimes it is hard to define. Don't know how I could be so blind. In the end, you go away.
This was just recently happened, but everybody was talking about their desks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so everybody, I mean, I thought it was kind of interesting. I saw your desk, PB's desk, Cortex's desk, my desk, and like 100 other people's desks. And, you know, all of those pictures are easily sort of linkable where Mephites make their magic, I guess.
Yeah. Wow, now the Metafilter tag is all desks. Cool. On Flickr. PJourn. Now that's an office.
Oh, yeah. He comments on my Flickr photos a lot. It's cool.
He's the guy that had the cool Vietnam photos. I don't know if we mentioned it in the last podcast.
The Vietnam photos? Yeah, I think we did.
Okay.
So, moving on, what else have you thought was awesome? Do you want to start talking about Metafilter?
Yeah, we probably should. Metafilter, I don't have a ton. Let me see. Oh, well, let's get the other Metafilters out of the way.
The other Metafilters? What do you mean the other Metafilters?
The jobs.
Tell us about that's right.
Jobs, and then we can do projects really quick.
Well, the job that I saw that I thought looked really good was the temporary web designer for the Guggenheim.
That's pretty cool.
Where basically they wanted somebody to do some like small time stuff for their publication department, but maybe that person could get hired in the long run. And it was kind of cool because it's like they wanted people with familiarity with new internet technologies such as, well, RSS. But, you know, they wanted somebody who was really kind of on top of things and it might turn into a real job and the Guggenheim would be sort of awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I busted my chops on working for UCLA on websites for departments and professors and stuff and CMSs. It's an awesome way to cut your teeth in the industry and these things usually aren't all life consuming like a startup, so. You have a life after work and
you get to get home, go home.
Yeah.
At night.
And if money's an issue, cause you don't get paid a lot in the nonprofit world, but you know, you can consult all night if you want on building sites for rock bands or whatever to make a little extra cash.
And you get discounts at the museum store.
Yeah. And if you get to work there, that's pretty damn cool. Is it?
I would like that. I would like that.
It's low-key.
Having like just an awesome place to like get to just walk into. That was my favorite thing about library school is it was in the library. So every
cool.
day that you went to school, you got to walk into the library and then go through this little door.
Awesome.
And the library school was like inside it. So yeah, it was cool. Has nothing to do with jobs or the Guggenheim.
My favorite project, I liked Bike Hacks from Slacker Manager. He's actually a dude that lives slightly near me. This is sort of the site I always wanted to build. Just sort of sharing tips on commuting with a bike or like they have how to make your own like bags for your bike out of like plastic and duct tape and how to like rig fenders up and stuff. It's pretty useful stuff.
That sounds nice. Bike hackery culture is really sort of up and coming. And I think we mentioned Alvi's music podcast last time, but
yeah.
I just wanted to make sure everybody's seen like he's still working on it. It's been cool. So
yeah.
We can encourage him to talk more and not just play the songs. But if you're looking for an entry into music without listening to every song every day,
yeah,
that's a good way to do it.
Sometimes it feels like drinking from the fire hose to just listen to everything from music. There's
although
so
you guys
songs.
Fixed the Flash Player, right? You should mention
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Paul
you and PB did. Or Paul
see.
Did.
So it's easier to, let me see, you can switch tabs now in all browsers.
And it'll keep playing music.
And we did the pop-out. So like on the front page of Metafilter, if you want to hear everything on the front page of Metafilter, the last 50 songs or whatever, you can just hit the, go down to the right side, the bottom of all the custom lists. There's the little player, but there's also a little pop-out. The pop-out's awesome. It just, you can just keep that sort of running on the side as a music player and browse about your day.
Totally awesome. So, down in the corner, little pop-out link. Don't know why. May not be perfect, but heaven knows we'll try. All around, even old friends are putting us down. Let's drop a big one and see what happens. Give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. Don't expect us, let's surprise them. Drop a big one.
Oh, I guess we'll play. I think I'm going to play. Where's all the music? I guess we should say something really quick I can cut into later or something. I like Baby Balrog's banjo fiddle stuff. Awesome, always.
What's the name of his band?
Catfish? No, wait. That was Who Hit John? Who Hit John?
Yes, they've got a MySpace page that's totally fun, and I told them I thought they should play our next Metafilterversary.
Yes,
because
yes.
They're totally, totally fun.
I almost tried to get Cortex to get the Harvey Girls to play, but we thought in an arcade it would be less than ideal. Everyone shup. Okay, play some acoustic music. And then
yeah. Right, you need to have like some big room and have the band play at one end and the bar at the other or whatever.
Yeah.
So maybe we're going to have to have the next party in Michigan.
No Miss Pac-Man machines in between.
Doo-doo-doo.
Yeah. So there's the. Yeah. I also like this. Nothing to say. I guess I'll post the URLs. And you can see everyone's using this, and Scott Andrews too. Everyone's using it kind of as a gig filter now. So we really need to build one.
Yes, gig filter on the to-do list.
Yeah, and the political science song I also liked, a Randy Newman cover. And you'll hear it throughout this. Yeah, it's funny. Three of the four songs we both liked. People are like, hey, I also have MySpace. Hey, I have a gig tonight, which is cool. And we really
well, and that. Especially those guys. I mean, they're in Boston. So I was like, you're almost close enough for me to come see you. Like, tell me when you're in Manchester, blah. It would be awesome. So for now, I'm friends with them on MySpace, but that's really suboptimal.
MySpace in general, suboptimal.
Yeah, I hate having to go there. And lastly, the other only thing I wanted to talk about before Metafilter MetaTalk is, or Ask Metafilter, was Carson B's astounding 210 favorites, shadowy back alleys of Metafilter MetaTalk post.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which was a great thread about, like, weird crap that showed up, like, once and then disappeared and nobody ever permalinked, and Carson was up late drinking coffee and looked through, like, 1,000 MetaTalk threads and made a list of all the cool shit he found there, which is now also on the wiki.
Yes, this is
just a really great thread.
Insane and awesome, because we're always just sporadically doing one-off things, probably once a week. There's just something like, hey, we just made this one-off page. You know, here's everyone with that listed something in their jobs, in their occupation field, and stuff like that.
And right,
a
and
lot
it
of
never
stuff,
gets linked anywhere. And
yeah, I can't find this stuff myself a lot of times.
No, you just have to remember, like, oh, we actually did that once. So at any rate, that's also on the wiki, but it's the best MetaTalk thread of recent memory, especially because nobody's fighting, everybody's happy.
Well, it's also like, I guess this is sort of an information architecture problem in that when you come up with all these one-off things, you know, I think this is where the wiki probably fills the void. It's not a good place to throw just a grab bag of every wacky, crappy thing that's popped out.
Well, you used to have like an et cetera page that was for, I don't even remember what that was
for. It was for like, here's what IRC is about, and here's how to like donate money if you really wanted to. And
we had a scholarship. Here's where you can buy Metafilter soap.
Yeah. Profile photos. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we just make, and a lot of times when we add a feature, we add like a meta feature for us admins to see how people are using it. Like, here's a page of everyone's profile photos when we added profile photos just to see.
And like, here's the profile browser so that we can make sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so
he's uploading a photo of their butt.
That's not. I just wanted to see, you know, how are people using it.
I wanted to make sure there was no goatee on the profile.
Oh so, yeah, so it's yeah, it's cool to have a place for that stuff. Oh, I see travels on it. We're gonna try. Me and Paul are gonna try and finish travel by the end of this month.
Okay.
Definitely this time. Finally. This
okay.
Time. Like that's all we're working on for the rest of the week, starting tomorrow.
Just let me know.
Okay, let's go to the best of, if you want to do Metafilter.
Best of Metafilter, there's only one post that is on my Best of Metafilter favorites list, although I may have forgotten other awesome threads. But this one, like, hits me right in my, like, age group, and it's the Which Solid Gold Dancer Are You? Thread. Yeah. Like, it was 80s television. It's not on display, too, who's the guy who did the gig in Boston and did one of the songs that we liked, who all of a sudden, like, showed up in my, like, universe out of nowhere with this awesome post and this awesome music. And it's, like, it's about Solid Gold, the Solid Gold Dancers, who were, like, these kind of, like, slutty dancers that danced on this, like, top 10 TV show.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not just that. Like, the post is amazing. It's got all these links. If you click through on the links, like, some of them are YouTube videos. Some of them are, like, Solid Gold Dancers. Where are they now? Some of them are – actually, it's a lot of YouTube videos. But, you know, talks about, like, other people that blog about them at the Solid Gold Dancers website, the wiki page. You know, it's just great. And then everybody – it felt like everybody – came in and had to like say like, oh my god, I remember in 1980 whatever feeling this way about that. And it was just sort of a, you know, everyone comes together and looks at something together, and it was a fun thread.
The thing about Solid Gold that I remember from childhood was that American Bandstand was just lily white, like
right.
dumb music, dumb dancing, all white kids. And then Soul Train was like all black and like all R&B acts and all black kids mostly in the audience. And the Solid Gold is kind of in the middle with half and half. And it was like the most interesting of those for cheesy dance shows. And I just noticed when you look at all the dancers, it's like a mix, which is like Dick Clark is not an interesting guy personally in my life. But yeah, like, you know, there's black dancers, white dancers. It's probably Solid Gold is more of a reflection of America.
Especially with those costumes. But yeah, no, I know what you mean. There was a bunch of different kind of people. It was more like Sha-na-na and less like Bill Haley and the Comets or whatever. But yeah, the thread was totally fun and everybody liked it. And cool. Yes, I enjoyed it. What else did you like about Metafilter?
My favorite one was probably the photos, goofy photos from Olin Mills photo studios and Sears and stuff. Just like awesome photos.
Astro Zombie, New Year's Eve, the day before.
Yeah.
Wow, I never even saw this.
They're just awesome in that they're like not ironic. Some of them are ironic, awesome photos of people in awful sweaters purposely going to like Sears to take photos of themselves being goofball. But most of them are like people earnestly just wearing the craziest hair and the craziest sweaters. And it's just sort of like fun found photography.
Oh my God.
It's very enjoyable.
Now I'm looking through these right now. Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Wow. Yeah. It's like normal people looking normal, sort of. Southern Baptist Convention. Oh my God.
Oh my God. The photos inside a glass.
Toby Keith album cover.
Oh man, they're funny.
That's a great thread.
In the sort of funny stuff, the lasagna cat thing from a couple days ago is hilarious because Garfield is so stupid and unfunny, and someone to like act him out and try and make the absurdity of it is just awesome. It's just like, oh, it's good. Did you see these? They're pretty funny.
No, I did not. I saw that everybody loved them, and I was like, you know, I thought about Garfield in December because I was in Abu Dhabi, and now I'm done thinking about Garfield.
This is funny because it pretty much just makes fun of Garfield, how stupid and not funny it is. I guess in the old history I never knew about until I joined Metafilter would be this unfortunate subject matter of it's like not prison camp revolt during, you know, time of Nazis, and this woman-led revolt of just the most sadistic, horrible things that happened. But this is just something I didn't even know existed. It's a great story.
I pretty much skip any thread. That,
I know. This is a great thing about Nazis, and it's like
and rape. Don't forget rape and Nazis.
Right, rape, Nazis, death. Everyone's killed. Who's in this? You know, whatever. Who's designated as being the helper in this? Whatever. A unit.
It's a nice post, though.
It's a unit who kills the previous unit, and then they had a revolt, and some of them lived, and yeah. But this is kind of the, I think the good, I think in general, we should probably, what do you think about, you know, a state of the union of things on, since we added more inside to Metafilter, what, 3-4 months ago? This is one of the cool, like, Wikipedia-style posts that really get well fleshed out because of this feature. And
right, because we can do the more inside.
Yeah, totally, yeah. Awesome. I think the more inside has been largely a huge success, in that it like fosters these kinds of awesome, incredible posts. And when people have like the solid gold one, like 50 supporting links, there's a way to do that in context that makes sense.
Right, right, right. And they're like, I want you to read about this topic, but there's not necessarily one thing
I think
you should read.
Yeah, we kind of worried that people would just use it as a giant my opinion essay, you know, here are three links and now here's 1,000 words of why Ron Paul rules or something like that. I think that was our worry, and it hasn't played out that way, which is good. Want to go to Ask Metafilter?
There was lots of great stuff in Ask Metafilter. There was, I had a whole bunch of Ask Metafilter stuff that I have been waiting to talk about since last December, although a lot of them are actually from the last like week or so. But probably my favorite one, which was another one of those like Metafilter people come together threads, was last week, and it was like, I'm female, I want to go to shows by myself, I feel like a dork, what do I do?
Oh, cool.
You know, what do you do if you go to a club alone? What do you do between bands? How do you not feel like a loser? And like, number one, there's lots of great advice in that thread. Number two, there's an incredible amount of like Mephite Metafilter people who do go to shows alone, who are like, oh, hey, it's no big deal, this is what I do. And like, just the sort of normalizing effect of having a bunch of people be like, oh yeah, dude, there's tons of people that go to shows alone. You don't notice them because nobody pays attention to you. It doesn't matter. And it's just, it's a great thread full of good advice. There's like 70 comments. They're almost all awesome. Like there's nobody like, you're a total idiot. Like, and there's just lots of advice for like how to go to a show by yourself and why it's better to go by yourself to see a band you like than, you know, stay at home because you can't find someone to go see like XYZ esoteric band.
Yeah, I've never gone to a show alone. I just always wanted to enjoy it with a friend, but yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I go to shows alone occasionally, like not that often because it's a freaking drive too, yeah. But like, it's not that hard to go to a show by yourself. And so if there's a band you really want to go to and yet you can't find anyone to go with you, you know, suck it up and go alone. And there's all sorts of like people explaining like it's actually really easy. Bring a book, talk to the bartender, develop a smoking habit, do, you know. Yeah, the smoking suggestion was like, I'm not seriously recommending you do this, but
my doctor,
but, like,
recommends,
you know,
smoking in between bands.
Right, I am not your doctor, but smoke at shows. So it was just cool because it was a whole bunch of people who talked about like, oh yeah, I totally do this all the time. And so it made it feel like a more normal thing to do. The other one, which was really recent, these are like my two top favorites, but then there's a whole bunch of like secondary favorites, was the cheap but bomb-proof thread.
Yes, that was one of mine. Yep.
Yeah, which once again, 119 favorites, which whatever, I didn't even notice that. I got a best answer in that thread, very exciting. but talking about what kinds of shit could you buy cheaply that turns out to be so totally awesome that, yeah, it's worth having.
Yeah, it's like, great. It's like 100 people saying, here's something I bought that actually lasted 10, 20, 30 years. And it's great.
Right. Cast iron cookware and craftsman tools and, you know, what cell phones, which other, like,
someone
what kind of luggage.
Flip-flops that lasted 20 years. You know.
Cutco knives, bicycle hubs,
yep.
And like some of the stuff, I mean, people sort of mixed it up a little. They're like, ah, that's not cheap. And one of the things that you noticed is that certain stuff used to have that reputation,
yeah.
Like Timex, for instance, and like,
yeah.
Doc Martens,
yep.
That don't have that reputation anymore because they're not as good anymore.
Yep. Yeah, everything's getting kind of throwaway now.
Well, yeah, everybody makes everything in China. I mean, I can remember when Doc Martens got bought and we were like, oh, and, you know, sure enough, like Doc Martens, which everybody that I knew wore in like late high school, early college,
yeah,
like totally got shitty.
Yep. I always remember.
And my favorite. Oh, sorry.
I always remember Bruce Sterling when he talks about Doc Martens. He blew my mind once when he said he's had this one pair for like 20 years and he's resold them like 4 times. And he goes, where did all that rubber go? Like, it's all on the street somewhere, and then it's in our, you know, water. It's in our air. I've inhaled how many Doc Martin soles, you know, when I eat? How much am I eating of Doc Martin sole?
Well, there was that Ask Metafilter thread about the atoms of cremated people. did you see that? That was kind of like, it was borderline chatty. Let me see if I can.
Where did they go? That's interesting. Well, you hear that like in grade school, right? Like that, oh, you know, Louis XVI's pee is in your glass of water because there's only
when you
so
fart,
much.
Your poop goes into somebody else's nose.
Well, I remember water is a closed cycle on this planet, right? So all water molecules that ever existed are here, and there's no new ones, so they've been used before.
Yeah, this one's called there's two right there.
Slightly morbid.
Slightly morbid science question, which is the cremation one.
Oh, that was me. But, no? Oh, no.
What?
I did the cremation, like, where's the smell go?
Oh, I remember that. I remember that.
Let's say someone dies.
But I also put it up with my crunchy granola pizza favorite cooking, because there's got to be, like, a favorite cooking thread. There's always a favorite cooking thread. This was somebody who was, like, learning to make pizza from scratch, and they wanted to know how from scratch you could make a pizza. Like, can you grind your own block? Can you grow your own tomatoes? Wow. Can you? But it's kind of a cooking wonkery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That one's yours. And it was just people talking about, like, how easy is it to grow your own hops? Or, you know, people talk about that with beer sometimes. And this was just,
I know a lot of bread maker friends that just do it, you know, make bread once a month or something, that have like little yeast jars, and they travel with it, and they try to make better doughs out of their own yeast.
Right. That they get like stray yeast out of the air, and yeah, it's interesting.
This also reminds me of the children's book I have to read every night to my daughter about the, what is it? The I Want a Pancake. He tells his mom in the morning when he wakes up, she goes, go cut some flour, and then he has to go to the mill to get milled into flour. He has to cut wheat. He has to do every single thing. It takes him all day to get his damn pancake.
That sounds like a great story, though.
Yes, it's very funny because it's like first principles on the entire life cycle of a pancake.
Right, and because it's you and it's pancakes, it's extra. Come on, don't tell me you didn't.
I didn't make that connection. No. I'm teaching my daughter about pancakes. That's funny.
Pancakes are good. Pancakes are good.
What else did you have? I had cheap but bomb.
The only other one that I had that was just like super top was actually really recent, which was, what the hell do I do when I'm sitting around and I've got like a deck of cards or like nothing? And like, what are good games to sit around and play when you don't really have any tools?
Oh, cool.
And so this is just a really good...
Ooh, useful. I would say, yeah, I think so. When you have cards or no cards allowed.
Well, they're like, a deck of cards is okay, but like you don't have anything else, you know?
You can play set, but you need special cards.
Dude, I love set. Have we talked about set before?
I don't think so.
Some people really love set, yeah. And other people are totally... Like, I've played with some people who are like, that hurts my brain. I don't want to play anymore.
I think there's only two piles you can put the entire world into. Those who love it and those who haven't played it yet. Like, I don't know a single person that played it once and hates it. I don't know if you want
to... Are you kidding? Really? It used to, like, make... Yeah. Like, it used to make Greg's head hurt. Like, he just couldn't...
But that's a good feeling, right? To, like, force yourself to think of patterns.
I thought so. Like, yeah. I felt like I could feel little neural pathways in my head going, pew, 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 pew.
I haven't been used in a while. Pew.
Exactly. But, you know, some people, I don't know if they don't like that feeling or I don't know what the problem is.
My favorite, I whittled down all my favorites. I had, like, 10 to 2, and you already picked one of them.
I appreciate that.
I can't believe this is just from a couple days ago, because there's so many great answers. This was a hobby horse of mine, 10 years ago, I remember.
Oh, porn for girls that isn't gross. People loved that thread.
Yeah, like 10 years ago, I remember telling a friend, like, it's clear to me, like, sex is all over the internet, and every wacky fetish in the world is out there. I think the internet will be good at finding porn for smart people that isn't degrading, that isn't, like, fake, isn't phony, isn't, like, the last 30 years of porn. I remember telling a friend, someone's going to be, like, the Amazon of porn for smart people. But it's 10 years later, and there isn't really any way to find porn that isn't, like, you know, belittling to people or humiliating or, like, just awful and fake and everyone's all siliconed out. So this is someone...
And yet, theoretically, you should totally be able to do that much, much better.
Yeah, everyone who works in the industry goes, whoa, we got to go be lowest common denominator so we can sell the most DVDs or whatever. But, like, there should be a long tail of tail. There should...
I just noticed it
as I started that sentence. There should be like smart people porn that like people are really having sex that actually are married or something. Like
Are married.
So when you read this, everyone's like, it is really hard. We're talking needles and haystacks here, but here's like a couple pointers to like female empowered porn that's not horrible.
Well, that's not just like whatever, lesbian porn for lesbians, which is different.
Yeah. And Violet Blue has a good post. It's linked. It should be a best answer, but
Tiny Nibbles. Oh, but, yeah. I've heard that book is really good. Smart Girl's Guide to Porn.
Yeah, and she has like all these links to all these porn places and porn videos and porn stuff that like I didn't know existed and it's hard to find and yep. I guess good vibrations is the only thing
ever. I'm
doing work.
I'm just an Ask Metafilter. What?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was like reviewing porn last night and feeling weird on my computer. Like, what am I, 17? Come on.
I live in a house with my wife.
Yeah. But like, yeah, this is I still don't know why there isn't like a simple to find, easy like porn for smart people that's like curated by someone with a brain. But yeah. Hard to find porn.
I know it. What else? What else did you like in Ask Metafilter?
That was it. That was I whittled down 10 to 2 just to save time, and that was it.
Well, because you've also got your chit chat with the Sounds of Young America.
Yeah, so. Chit chat with Jesse. I was just asking about how he does Sounds of Young America. How does he get? My main question was, how does a guy who's like 24 with an apartment in LA get like people? You know, characters from The Wire to come to his apartment or major music stars to like.
What character from The Wire came to his apartment?
Bubs and Bunk this week on the show. Amazing.
Really?
Yeah. And it's good. Like, I just started listening to the first 10 minutes of it. I was like, oh my God, how did he get them in LA to show up to his apartment and talk for an hour about The
You've
Wire?
Been watching season 5, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Watching season
I've
5.
Seen the first couple episodes.
Yeah,
what the
me
hell
too.
Is his last? I'm trying to find his recent programs. Let me find his list of programs. There it is. Where the hell is the permalink?
I don't drive enough to listen to podcasts.
Yeah, it's the only time I ever listen to him is when I'm driving, and I don't drive that much. But all right, when I take an hour-long bike ride, sometimes I'll listen to one.
Yeah, I like the fact that guy that plays Bubbles on The Wire is getting a lot more screen time. He's like my favorite.
Yeah, and there's a lot of discussion of race in the first 15 minutes I listened to it of like them saying it was like his first sort of big acting role, and he was like,
right,
I don't know if I should be yet another drug addict on TV as a black man. That sucks. I mean, that's his first big role. He's like, where are things going to get better after that? But after he did like a reading and read the script, he was like, holy shit, this is something completely different. This is going to be big and good and not just a normal cop show.
And totally make a difference. Yeah, and if you see like pictures of him on IMDb, like he is an attractive man. So, you suspect he's not going to be in this kind of ratty, pretend you're missing a tooth sort of thing the whole time.
Yep. And so, And I've been underwriting the show because I like it so much.
Which turned into a very funny meta filter, like, bleh, yeah. We have advertising. We advertise.
I know.
You may want to You may want to make a little, no, I'm not freaking advertising.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is an advertisement. That's sort of a side benefit. But I mean, I like I told the person who made that point that like just in 2007, I did things like executive produced, I think, two albums for like friends who are artists. I bought art from friends. And like this was sort of, I really like this radio show and this guy wants money to like keep paying his rent so he can keep doing a radio show instead of giving a job. And I was like, shit, you know, that's way more fun than a umbrella from my local PBS, you know.
Well, and that's one of the great things about being like an adult with a real job is that you can actually like help your friends out who are, you know, working at their sort of early stuff.
Yeah.
And be able to really do some awesome stuff. It's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not too self-linky that I interviewed him, hopefully. But yeah, I think I explained that on the show. And I think I'll run the interview before this, so... I think this is about it for the podcast.
That sounds great.
Cool.
We'll talk to you on another Wednesday.
Yeah. Yeah. This has been the Metafilter Podcast with your hosts Matt Howie and Jessamine West of Metafilter.com. Theme music is by Cortex, otherwise known as Josh Millard, and interstitial music is our handpicked favorites from Metafilter Music at music.metafilter.com. And we thank you for listening. Older shows are available at podcast.metafilter.com. Thanks.